Welcome back after a busy lunch. I hope you enjoyed the second session after the keynote. And I'm going to talk about SharePoint as a service, and it's going to be a pretty wild ride across a lot of topics that have to do with operating SharePoint as a service. I'm not going to necessarily talk about how we run BPOS and how all that works, but I will tell you what the principles are that you can apply in your data center and how we are going to hopefully help you being able to run as well and as scalable as we run SharePoint in the cloud. And there will be lots and lots of areas where Microsoft Consulting Services is working on a specific set of IP that we will, of course, deliver as part of our customer engagements, but we will also make available to our partners so that they can engage on a very robust fashion. Why is SharePoint as a service interesting? When you look at SharePoint, you look at applications, Team Collab, and other things. And I have done my fair share of rescue projects for SharePoint because SharePoint sucks, it's bad, performance is bad, blah, blah, blah. What happened most of the time is a customer engages somebody. Let's say MCS. Let's blame the Microsoft Consultant guys. And yeah, I'm one of those, so you can blame me. And we talk about the requirements, the scenario, and most of the time it's one workload, and I will talk about workloads very often in this talk, that customers are interested in. Think of a workload as a series of scenarios, team collaboration, my site, whatever those scenarios might be. One or two are being chosen. We optimize the heck out of the infrastructure of SharePoint for those two workloads, and then we leave. And then what happens is what I call the SharePoint discovery begins. The customer sees, oh, Excel services. Wow, performance point. All these things are all of a sudden coming up. And if you look at SharePoint 2010, if you thought SharePoint 2007 was big, 2010 is this. This is a series of capabilities that we group together as collaboration, search, content management, and so forth. And here are all the workloads that are associated with those capabilities. So 2010 has a factor 10 of functionality that's got added into the system. So you really need to think about how do you host multiple workloads on this thing, because SharePoint Discovery is going to be even bigger than what it was with 2007, and customers are going to use more and more of these features because they are A, convenient, integrated, and to some extent very sexy. So the problem will become bigger with 2010. Good news is the SharePoint team has invested a lot of money and time and resources learning from 2007. What the customers did, how they platform didn't scale or scaled poorly, and so forth. And we have worked together with the BPOS team. A lot of this learning comes from our own experience of hosting SharePoint. And I can tell you there were some very robust discussions between the BPOS team and the SharePoint development team around hosting SharePoint and making it scale robustly and operating it and so forth. So a lot of what you'll see in SharePoint 2010 is actually coming out of our own experience hosting the software. And this journey will continue with the next version of Office 15, which is underway in planning, and so forth. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that you kind of get derived out of the our own investment hosting the software. The other piece that we see often is that people think, unfortunately, SharePoint is too easy to install, from my perspective, too easy to deploy. It needs to be painful, like a nice Unix command line with 100 commands that you have to get right just there, so people think about before they do this install, setup, config. We make it too easy, so you can really screw it up fast and efficiently. So one of the things we're doing is providing a framework of how you plan and think about your SharePoint deployments. Because as usual, if you plan a lot, the pain is less. I don't think there will never be no pain, but there's less pain if you start thinking a lot. And this is effectively the current thinking in terms of think about the scenarios, think about the workload strategies that map to the scenarios, think about governance, and think about your sourcing strategy. If you are a partner or a consultant, one word that will become a very important word for you is sourcing. Because a lot of people will now start to look at, do I source it myself, meaning my own IT, Will I go to a partner, or will I go, let's say, to Microsoft to source the capability to host collaboration, my side, or whatever the workload is that the customer is interested in? So that's a big thing that you will start seeing more often as part of engagements around SharePoint, Exchange, and other workloads that either we or partners and ISVs provide. But it's not a simple discussion. One is good, one is bad. because there's a lot of things to consider. I talked about in my keynote, there's data governance, regulatory compliance. And once you go into, for example, SharePoint document or records management, there's a whole bunch of new things that you need to think about that the cloud providers will slowly address, but not necessarily address right now. There's also quite a feature gap between what we offer in the cloud and what you can do with SharePoint on-premise. As I said before, cloud providers say no. And they say no if the features are limiting scalability and are possibly too expensive for us to implement, among other reasons. So part of this is if you want to exploit SharePoint to the fullest, you might have to run parts of it on-premise. You can run parts of it on the cloud. So there is a quite complex discussion that you need to have in terms of deploying SharePoint. The delivery approach we are working on and that we will make available through consulting services and through our partners in the end then to our customers is thinking about a lot of analysis capabilities, environment analysis that lead to a strategy and roadmap, workload and governance, and a sourcing strategy plan to implement the various features. We will then provide you with reference models, architectures, and a reference implementation that is based upon the Microsoft Online implementation, and again, I'll talk a lot about that, to help you deploy the way we deploy. What is the architecture topology? What are the key decisions we make in terms of how you deploy SharePoint? How do you configure it? What storage systems do you use? How do you integrate the various pieces? All the stuff that you normally have to do very diligently, we at least will give you the outline of that plan as part of our engagements. So that you can say, okay, this decision doesn't work for me because I have a certain other strategy, but at least you know what we are doing in the cloud so that you can make best use of that information and learning. The talk is structured into four different areas. I will talk about workloads and features. I'll talk about the SharePoint architecture considerations, the SharePoint automation environment. You could argue it's the operational blueprint in terms of what are we doing to automate SharePoint deployment management. And then I'll talk about dynamic infrastructure. What are the considerations that we suggest you go through? And all of this, the first three layers, you can ignore if you choose to use BPOS as from Microsoft, because we take care of all of those. This talk is really about taking the learning that we gained and share it with you so that you can run it on your own environments. Steve Ballmer coined this phrase. I'm not sure that I like it, but since he coined it, I kind of have to use it. It's modern choice. People want choice in the sense of where do they run their IT capabilities or workloads. And generally, we look at on-premise, private or dedicated cloud environments, and online environments. Those are the three choices that we're seeing, and you can argue the private cloud can be hosted by a partner, can be hosted by your own IT environment, and those have all implications for the way the architecture has to be designed, and you have to think about these things. And for most customers that at least I have seen so far, they actually have parts of it online and parts of it on-premise because of certain considerations around regulatory compliance, security, et cetera, et cetera. Microsoft distinguishes SharePoint Online, which is really the standard implementation of BPOS. Very, very cheap, quote unquote, but zero scale, zero configurability. There, people will say a lot of no and say, nope, you like it, fair enough. If you don't, okay. But if you think that's just a consumer play, Starbucks, for example, is a BPOS S customer, which is what's now called SharePoint Online. They run 150,000 mailboxes and users on SharePoint, on standard SharePoint, because that's for their store users. They use BPOS D dedicated for their back office users because we allow a little bit more flexibility there. So, for example, SharePoint Online will not host RIM. sorry, SharePoint BPOS D will. So we will host RIM exchange servers to synchronize BlackBerries in BPOS D. We won't do it in SharePoint Online. Then there are on-premise, there are two options. I personally think there, at the end there will only be one, because it makes sense to think about a cloud-like deployment, which is what this dynamic on-premise means, as opposed to a plain or standard on-premise, what we would do today or did in 2007. The SharePoint architecture is changing quite dramatically. I don't know, many of you are SharePoint gods, so that they have already dealt with this architecture, which is various web applications, various site collections, quite partitioned from a logical SharePoint architecture. If you then switch to the way the cloud deploys SharePoint, we actually have only one type of web application, one web application pool, and we host everything effectively in a single set of site collections. It's a flat namespace, if you think about it that way, and it's deployed like that. Why do we do this? Because A, we have trust that we can scale it and it's secure enough, but also because we want to make everything standard, so we don't have to worry about, oh, is this a web app server 1, 2, 3? So that when we apply resources, it effectively is the same set of resources. We don't have to make operational distinctions between this or that site or this site collection or this web application. Again, I talked about standardization. That's one of the ways we're standardizing the architecture. Some of the scenarios that enterprise customers would like to see are tough to support in this new scenario. We are still working through some of the details in terms of if we have two external interfaces we would like to have. BPOS, or the BPOS architecture, doesn't easily allow that. So there's a couple of things we are still working through in terms of certain scenarios we know customers need in terms of their enterprise deployments, and how do you effectively get that done. SharePoint functionality, as I said before, the public cloud, Microsoft Standard Online, rich functionality, but limited in terms of customization and application development. Dedicated cloud, more flexibility, but still constrained. And on-premise, the full feature set of SharePoint. The thing to think about is always, am I planning to go with my workload sometime into the cloud? Because a lot of times we see ISVs, customers starting on-premise, and then after a while they say, I really would like to move this into the cloud. I don't want to operate anymore and go. I see the first day when a Microsoft consulting team is done designing something on-premise, and then the CIO turns around and, I really want it on the cloud now. And then we have designed stuff that can't be moved to the cloud. So we are working towards guidance. What is a good cloud architecture for BPOS application specifically? So if you write SharePoint apps, how do you design those things that they are well behaved and can be hosted in the cloud? I don't know how many of you have played with SharePoint 2010. The sandbox is a key feature for this architecture. So if you haven't looked into the way SharePoint applications are written, the sandbox is a key hint of how you look at the cloud. And there's a certain set of patterns we will publish that will help you with, okay, how do I architect solutions so that they work together and effectively can be moved into the cloud when you so desire? Because that seems to be a trend, an approach that customers more and more want to be able to do. They might not want to do it right now, but in 2 years' time, they might say, okay, now I'm ready, let's go. And then your solution is better, not the thing that will stop you from moving up there. Yeah. In general, anything that is deployed directly on web front ends, anything that requires IIS configuration or other specifics, big no-no. The BPOS team has actually published an application guide, what they will support today, and that will be continuously updated as we deploy SharePoint 2010 and learn more about what's safe and what's scalable and so forth. Because as we go into fiscal year 11, for us, our fiscal year starts in 10 days or something like that, the new one. The goal is for SharePoint Online, the BPOS S implementation, to host 150,000 machines so that we can host up to 30 million users. That's the goal for the architecture that I will talk through. And that's why we are very careful how we allow customization and configuration when you have those kind of goals. I've showed this before, but there is a methodology that we provide as part of consulting services of how you think about your workloads, how you think about SharePoint, and effectively drive from alignment around objectives to the capability analysis. So capabilities are effectively business functions that you would like to implement, and we have a mapping of custom or common business functions to the workloads that SharePoint and Exchange and other technologies provide, so that you can see, okay, generally customers would like to do X, and here is the way to implement it using SharePoint. The goal is also to get to say, if it's 80% compatible with the standard of how SharePoint does things, have a discussion with your business customer to say, do you really want these 20%? Because then I have to customize, and then I might not be able to go into a possibly cheaper or more efficient operating model. So those are the concerns that you have to see for yourself, because Microsoft consultants will have to learn to say no. Or not no, but you should really think about it. Don't just go blindly and go, let's start the .NET compiler and customize the heck out of it. Customization is going to be a very considerate effort, should be anyway, but because of the cloud, it's going to be far more considerable, or has to be far more considerable than before. I won't go through all of these because, again, this is a discussion in itself, how you look at business unit maps, collaboration summary maps, the sourcing maps, and so forth. But all those are artifacts that we will provide templates for so that you can look at them by workload and say, make the decision, do I want this to host possibly in the cloud, directly in the cloud, or do I want on-premise? And what are the various attributes that you care about in order to drive this? Then you look at an environment in terms of what are the various governance features and discussions you need to have, what are the constraints that you have, and then you effectively drive these various maps and so forth out of that discussion. Again, a lot of our SharePoint architects are learning how to do this discovery or this business discussion, because a lot of this is aligning with business goals, thinking about overall sourcing strategies. I've seen a lot of customers looking at servicing as service orientation as a sourcing strategy, but they don't have an operational plan for that sourcing strategy. Give you a great example, won't name names on the customer side, but they outsourced Active Directory management and the data center management to the three-letter company, and they outsourced SharePoint design and hosting to a two-letter company. And now the SharePoint guys, unfortunately, they did it in the wrong sequence. So the AD design was already done, and the SharePoint design started, and then the SharePoint guy said, I need a change in AD. The three-letter company said, sure, no problem. Here's the change request. And here's the dollar sign that you had done. So they really hadn't thought about how does this all work together. They made a purchasing decision, and this purchasing decision drove the sourcing strategy. And again, sourcing strategy, as I said, is going to become a very important word for lots of people that really didn't think about this. Because a lot of times you not only have to think about isolated workload sourcing, but you have to think about what are the dependencies for these workloads, and do I make a technical sourcing strategy, a purchasing, or a mixture of both? So very, very important discussion. And again, we are working on tools to help you with these things so that you have a at least a base to start from. One of those tools, and again, if it strains your eyes, don't worry about it. It's effectively a workload map that looks about the features that are available in the online, dedicated, and constrained online on-premise versions, and effectively shows various elements of SharePoint technology and how they are enabled or supported in various environments. Again, this is a workbook that we will share via consulting services, and we are our partners. I have no idea how to make it directly available to the customer if you don't care about consulting services, but since I'm a consultant, I kind of have to give my people the tools to do these things. But if you're interested, I'm willing to have a debate how to make that publicly available as a feature, quote unquote, for SharePoint. The other piece we are looking at is providing you with a governance matrix on a per workload basis. So when you look at record management, my sites, collaboration, whatever the workloads are, we are going to look at the decentralization, federation, centralization as one of the governance models and provide you with templates and guidance in terms of what do you win, what do you lose. If you go to the cloud, what you win is you lower your costs most likely, and you only pay as you go. If you go on-premise, you have lots of control, but most likely your cost base is going to be higher, most likely. But there's a certain set of things we will provide to you so that you can look at them and make decisions. Again, we believe that the workload-based decision tree is going to prevail eventually because workloads, we have seen customers saying collaboration, my sites, all that stuff goes into the cloud. That's where they can run most efficiently. But custom application development, because they have valuable IP and other things, will stay on-premise. So we are separating the workloads and drive the workload where it should be rather than a standardized decision. It's either that or that. We believe it's going to be an and for quite some time. Now we walk through some workload thoughts. Let's go to the next layer. Now we're looking at SharePoint scale, SharePoint architectures, scaling topologies, and some of it is not necessarily sensible for customers because it's talking about millions of users, but I do have customers that have millions of users, the US Army and others. They are moving their whole architecture to BPOS. They have 7 million email inboxes and lots and lots and lots of users in interesting places, let's say it that way. The SharePoint scaling architecture will start with a limited scaling architecture based upon a very small deployment, go from small, medium, large, and then into multi-farms. And we believe we can scale SharePoint 2010 efficiently to, as I said before, hundreds of millions of users with a target first for 30 million. And I'll walk you through what the architecture of that looks like. Before we go there, let's talk about a couple of thoughts in terms of what are the new features, new thoughts in SharePoint 2010. I don't know, again, how many of you are SharePoint gods, but SharePoint 2007 had a couple of shared services that were relatively constrained. And we have opened Pandora's box, meaning we now have moved or created a real services or app services tier that you can deploy separately. And you don't have any constraints anymore on a per farm deployment or any of this stuff. Good news is that, but the bad news is you have infinite flexibility, which means supportability is sometimes an interesting issue. So what we are trying to do is use the MS Online architecture to say, here's the way we do this, please do the same, because then we have an easier time supporting you. But the model is there. It's very flexible. You can create your own services so that you can put it like an Excel service environment, for example, for your own apps. You can write it yourself, add it into the SharePoint environment, and off you go. We have added claims-based security into the environment, and we are doing official cross-farm communication, cross-tier communication using web services. So WCF, Windows Communication Foundation, is now part of the SharePoint infrastructure. A lot of people used to do that themselves. When they needed to go from SharePoint to some other service, they called directly. We now do this as a default service for you. The claims-based authorization model is unfortunately not implemented everywhere. There's a certain set of workloads that do not support claims. They are, for example, the BI, the business intelligence environment, still relies on Kerberos and Active Directory. And so you need to look at workload by workload. If you say I'm into claims-based authentication, authorization, I need to look at the workload and say, does it support it? Our workload mapping tool will actually outline which workloads are supported by in terms of claims-based authorization. And then simplified administration model, I don't know many of you use PowerShell. If you haven't learned it, that is a very, very powerful tool which Microsoft will invest a lot and time in to provide more coverage of. So SharePoint 2010 supports full automation using PowerShell. So anything we can do in the administration tools, you can do in the automation models. And we need it because MS Online doesn't use humans. They use business processes and automation processes and use PowerShell to execute those. So again, you get a derived benefit where the office people didn't necessarily think about automation a lot, but the BPOS guys need it, so they invested heavily in automation. And they will continue to do so and grow the coverage. You always know when some technology is great if the open source community immediately copies it. So there is actually a PowerShell copy running around from the open source community. Service isolation, again, we needed this for our own sakes so that we can scale the environment in a secure fashion. So each service application uses a separate database, a separate app pool. We have multiple service application and we can switch different accounts, databases, and so forth. So a very flexible model. Multi-tenancy is supported. Again, we need it in order to make sure that the cost base doesn't go crazy. If you haven't looked at multi-tenancy is simply the ability for you to run multiple logical accounts or customers on the same SharePoint infrastructure without them getting in their way. If you would do this today, Search, for example, doesn't understand multi-tenancy in 2007, you would actually bring all the results back that are in the farm. Not a good idea if you have, let's say, two competitors on the same farm. Bad thing. So part of this is for our own sakes, but you can use it yourself, of course, on-premise, for example, separate business units that you don't want sharing the same stuff. You don't necessarily have to have one single SharePoint thing anymore. You can say this SharePoint part is available to every user. This one is only available to business unit A, B, or C, so that they can say people that want to use Windows Workflow or SharePoint workflows, yes, but we will put a more governance around it and we isolate them so that they don't necessarily influence the reliability of the service environment. Again, all something that we heard from customers, obviously, but we also heard it from our BPOS team and saw the SharePoint people put it into the solution so that you can run SharePoint as a service using these kind of techniques in order to isolate and share. Because at the end of the day, if you run things as a service, especially as a public service, if you can't share, the cost base is too high. And consider an architecture. There's logical and physical aspects. The logical aspects are a lot of times bound to the workload that you want to host. That's why it's so important to really analyze the workload, understand what's going on, who's going to use them, and then map it to the architecture for SharePoint. Look at isolation, multi-tenancy as ways to scale the environment and share the resources. Scale out as needed. We will talk about that. Logical topology, regulatory restrictions, geopolitical regulatory environments. So when you're looking at pushing a worldwide deployment, I don't know how many of you have dealt with worldwide deployments. I work with an oil and gas company where the poor guys in New Zealand have, I don't know what it is, a very, very slow link to a very, very slow connection. And then they had to go all the way to Europe to get to their SharePoint sites. That was not very fun. And the users refused to use it. So we had to come up with some interesting tricks. Good news is that SharePoint does support federation now. So if you need search federation and other kinds of federation, you can actually deploy in a distributed fashion, optimizing for certain groups of users, but still provide a single logical view for certain aspects of the SharePoint content and so forth. Physical topology, scale up, scale out. The general architecture for SharePoint is scale out. The only exception might be SQL Server as a storage backend, but again, we prefer you to think about scale out there as well, because cloud, as we all have heard this morning, and I'm sure you have heard before, relies on scale out in order to scale. Rather than having bigger computers doing a scale up, we are trying to scale out. And if you look at the partitioning model of SharePoint using site collections and others, you can see easily how you can architect it so that it can scale out. Host directory close to host services directory. So if you look at Active Directory as your authentication environment and you don't use claims, make sure that an AD controller is very close to Friend SharePoint, because they do talk a lot. So you have a lot of interaction going on, and if that is not very close by and you have latency, that's not a good thing. Think about modeling your applications in terms of how do you put or where do you put your workloads on the one side, and where do you put your applications that are based upon these workloads or extending the workloads and so forth. As you can already see, we are, as Microsoft Online, going completely virtual. So there's no physical servers outside of, obviously, the Hyper-V hosts running around anymore. The whole SharePoint instance are running virtual. So if there's a consultant out there or a customer partner that thinks virtual doesn't work for SharePoint, well, Microsoft Online, both flavors, will go completely virtual. There's not going to be physical servers running around outside of the SQL layer, but the whole SharePoint stuff is completely virtual, all of it. And we believe we can use the scale-out mechanism efficiently enough to provide the necessary performance and load balancing and so forth. But the management approach, which I will talk a lot about, relies effectively on virtualization in order to really push this efficiently through. But that's effectively the way we are moving forward, and we think you can too, or should, rather. Server role groups, I don't know how many of you have heard about the term server roles. Heard about it? Server roles is effectively a way to dedicate functionality that you place on a server. And in the MS Online architecture, I'm not sure if I have a picture later, we have 4 image types that we deploy and 15 roles that we deploy. And there is a specified architecture of what role goes where in which in the layer. So that you see the front-end layer has a certain set of roles, then there is a service layer that has a certain set of roles, and then there's the SQL tier, which has its own roles. In this case, only the SQL Server role. But you see already that we have a front-end tier with a certain environments. Again, I have a picture somewhere here that talks about what roles they are. Then there is an application tier that we are where we host the SharePoint services. And then there is the SQL tier. Again, we are using the server roles as a placement mechanism. So where do they go? And in MS Online, because these services are required to scale to multiple corporations, we need federation, we need claims-based authentication. And as I said before, certain workloads don't support claims-based authorization. We effectively bundle all the services here and put dedicated tiers into the front end where we need them for applications that don't support federation. That's one of the considerations we have to go through, and it might be useful for you to consider that as well. Scale units is another thing that I don't know if you have heard about. Anybody heard about scale units? Let me explain what that is. I made a snotty remark this morning that most capacity planning is this, which is certainly true. And we all do it. There are certainly good ways of estimating things, but you always put risk factors in and you pad, and all of a sudden, boom, there's a big infrastructure running and humming. What we are doing in the cloud, because having big infrastructures humming and bumming over there is very expensive if they're not being used, is we introduce scale units. The scale unit idea comes from Hotmail. How do you design a mail service which might completely be irrelevant or might go to 500 million users where they are today? What do you do? So what they did is they said, okay, our big constraint is storage. So we are going to look at a unit of storage. In their case, after a couple of years, they went to a petabyte of storage. That's their scale unit. And they design an architecture of all the servers that are required to service this one petabyte. So they know how many users can go on there and so forth. They put that in place as their architecture. And then whenever they monitor, so they monitor the growth of the storage, how many users are there, how much storage is being used. And at 60%, they say, we need another scale unit. So they plunk another petabyte of storage in there, and so forth. And that's the way scale units work. And the rest of the Microsoft cloud architectures also uses scale units the same way, because we're switching from what we're calling capacity planning, which is this thing, to capacity management, where you say, okay, the architecture scales out, so I can slice them, and I will monitor my growth factors and say, well, user sites, whatever the growth factor is, and at 60-70%, I make effectively the planning for the next one. It depends on your processes, when what the lead time is for these things, but at the end of the day, most architectures, including SharePoint, you don't have to plan to the nth degree because you can slice it. And once you can slice it, you can grow it by slice. Very, very important technique that I would look at if I hadn't thought about this before intently. So in this case here, we are having a single farm environment with three what we call small so two farms. One is a SQL tier, and this is the application and the services tier. And we just grow by server roles. And in this case, we're not doing server roles individually. We are looking at server roles as a group. So each workload is mapped to a server role. A, let's say, collaboration on my side needs this one, that one, and so forth. So there's a picture that emerges. Whenever we deploy a workload, we map it to the server roles. And then we group the server roles and determine how many of the unit of growth do I need. So if I say my sites, let's take that as a workload, need two of the web front end, one app server, and a slice of SQL. We determine that and we say, okay, I'm a 150,000 user employees company. Let's make 10,000 users my scale unit. And then I determine how many server roles do I need for this 10,000 users, and then I measure them. And that's the way I grow the system, because it takes time to onboard users. It takes time to deploy this thing to Latin America or wherever it needs to go, so that you don't have to deploy something that goes up front. The other nice thing about this is, because we can map and isolate it to server roles, you can actually put multiple workloads on it, and it will still scale, because of the way we architect it and the way we isolate the various services and the various applications. Yep. Yep. In this case, it's the SharePoint architecture that will rescue you. You will just have to install multiple SQL instances. So the way you do this is you use the site collection as your bounding factor, and you can effectively run multiple SQL servers supporting a single farm. So you don't need to scale out the SQL server, because you can scale it, scale up. Sorry, you need to scale it out. So multiple SQL instances, okay? So you run multiple SQL servers, and you dedicate a SharePoint site collection to a specific SQL server. It's data partitioning is really what it is, yes. So SharePoint can do that today already in 2007. And in 2010, because of the way we architect the services and so forth, it is even more flexible. That's what we use in the SharePoint architecture. So it isn't as possibly nifty as Oracle RAC. I'm being very careful here, because Oracle RAC is good technology, but it has also some interesting side effects. And it's not quite as automated as SQL Azure, because SQL Azure would do that automatically for you. So the management overhead is a little bit higher than if you would go scale up. But you actually gain the benefits of using cheap hardware on the one side, and you also contain the unit of failure to a smaller size. Yeah? Again, depending on how big your user community is, that might be an interesting one, where you say, my sites are down, but team sites are still up, because that's the partitioning mechanism I used. It doesn't do it automatically, so you still have to do some thinking in terms of what are the site collections going to look like, how many will I have, what's the various, as I said, workloads, and you look at the workload dependency map, which we will give you. This workload will require this SQL database, and will a part of site collection, and then you have to manually move them. In the case of site collections, you are not stuffed, but it's pretty hard because they have a hard limit. There are tools available for you to take a certain set of the sites, collections, and move them out. For the other pieces, because they're isolated SQL databases, you can just detach them, move them, copy them, or you use a SAN and you just attach it to a different SQL server. So SQL, I don't know if you're Oracle guys or SQL Server guys, so the problem is when Oracle guys talk about databases, they mean something different. Okay, SQL Server has this thing called an instance and a database. Yeah, and so you take the user database and copy it. No, you can't. Yeah. Again, I have not seen yet the mechanisms that the SQL, that the SharePoint Online team is going to use for that problem, because they might have the same. So I will get some more detailed guidance. If you are interested in that, send me a mail, and I'll see what I can find out for you. But again, right now, there is no automatism in the system that says, oops, I need to workload balance. Absolutely. As I said, it's nifty technology, has its own challenges. Yeah, has to. I don't know that level of detail, sorry. If there is a problem, then you need to send me a mail. I'll find out, but I don't know. Did you have a comment? We'll get there. How we do SQL Server, but that's yet another story. And again, now we are looking at two farms. So you scale the same logical architecture across to other pieces. And if you then look at content farms, you effectively look at a single service farm, a single SQL farm, a single service farm, and you have multiple content farms. So the way the web front ends, as I said, I will show you the role group in a second. The content farm is what we call the Windows front ends and a certain set of applications. Then you have the federated services farm, and you have the SQL tier. And we can actually scale both the SQL tier and the content tiers independent of each other because of the way the SharePoint architecture works and the way we have partitioned the roles so that they have a certain set of dependencies that we can isolate to a farm. Yeah. That's a key thing for us in Amazon Line in order to scale this thing. And again, you can now take it from multiple farms to a network of farms because of the way federation works. So we are going to deploy this technique across the globe so that we provide recovery and availability and geo-distribution of systems for our customers want to do this. So it's a very interesting architecture, operational approach. This is outside of the SharePoint partitioning in terms of what are the groups of roles, how you partition the data and so forth. The biggest shift in the way we do things. And I'll take you on the ride and you will tell me afterwards if you're going to get scared or if you're going to get interested. So as I said before, you can deploy and operate SharePoint as a service using these techniques that I've talked about or sketched for you or for us. And the way we're doing this is we're using scale out to effectively deploy groups of servers or server roles and effectively isolate them in content farms, services farms, and SQL farms. And we are using Hyper-V and virtualization as the key technique to drive this dynamic behavior, where we effectively plan Hyper-V deployments and we plan then the deployment of workloads in a virtualized server environment. The key thing is actually not virtualization in terms of running multiple virtual machines on a server. It's the way the VHD files are being, we can manage and automate the deployment or the creation of these VHD files. That's the real interesting thing we have in mind because of certain operational techniques that we are deploying. The end resulting picture of the architecture looks like this. User demand goes over a load balancer, There's a certain set of load balancers that we deploy inside the SharePoint environment. The load balancer targets workloads, and then the workloads are being hosted by virtual resources, and we use the scale unit approach to drive scale. Very, very simple, quote unquote. And then there's a certain set of foundation techniques here and a certain set of monitoring and management tools that I will talk about. So you can do this with physical hardware. It's just a little bit harder if you want to do it. So we want to scale as needed. The technique is actually not the virtualization per se. It's really the role group, server roles, role groups, content farms. But it is nifty to use a virtualization. It's much easier. Now we are getting to things where we depart from common wisdom. We never update bits. There is no patching. We don't patch, period. We also don't install software. So in no Microsoft data center can you run MSI setup. As I said before, we don't use the registry. So SharePoint has done a lot of work to make sure that the state that they run is actually saved in shared databases. And it's not on the single node outside of some configuration information that is actually also drawn out of a database. So it's copied locally. Again, remove human interaction. Everything is automated as much as feasible. And then reduce content database size, separate content from services. We talked about that already. And leverage claims, authentication, and federation multi-tenant features to drive this. Again, we will talk a little bit more about the never update. All this is done on Microsoft standard technology. We actually don't use Azure at this point with SharePoint. There's too many restrictions for SharePoint to run on Azure. They're working on it, but still something to do. And we are using PowerShell to automate the whole deployment, configuration, management of the environment. We also have specific PowerShell scripts for our load balancers and for other hardware components we depend on. So talk to your load balancing provider, Cisco, F5, or whatever they are. They do have either web services-based automation or PowerShell-based automation so that you can drive the necessary changes in the load balancer automatically. Because there is a lot of techniques, which I have slides for, but I'm not going to talk them through, how you update a farm using the load balancer as the technique to hide things. Rolling upgrades is something that is known, I think, in the industry since quite some time, and that's effectively what we do. And then we use GFS, our Global Foundation Services people, as I said before, to host the data center and provide the way you automate the deployment of the resources. And the SharePoint team is quite hardcore. They only use shipping products. Office is an interesting team to work with. If you try to get into the Office product group, you have to be released when they start coding. They don't rely on things that might ship or might not ship. And so the same thing applies to what's now called the SharePoint data center team. These are the components. All of this you can buy yourself and assemble and drive the same architecture. The second thing we do is we're creating a grid of identical hardware resources to deploy this. So there's no differentiation between application or content farms and SQL farm and services farms. We use this MAC1, MAC2 thing that I talked about this morning. So the SQL servers get MAC2, the rest gets MAC1. And that's the way we drive this. Why is this important? We want to be able to move load where it needs to be. So we don't want to be looking at, this is this kind of server and that kind of server. We want to be able to freely move the stuff around, and we don't want to think about differentiation in the resource layer. The resource layer is supposed to be uniform and effectively available as a service that we can leverage at any point. Virtual all the services, and then we will talk about the infrastructure foundation. Another big point, we're using SharePoint RBS, sorry. So in this case, we use our buying power to do that. And the other piece we do is we actually introduced what's called a model year into the architecture. And the model year 2010 will look like this. Model year 2011 will look like that. And you have to know which model year you're looking at. So, but at the scale we are talking, we order whatever 50,000 model year 2010, and we then make sure that the deployments happen in a consistent fashion. But it's a good point. It's a problem. RBS, you know what that is? Remote blob storage. We had not an ill-received attempt before, but it wasn't quite as thought out as we would like it to be, to outsource the blobs from the SharePoint databases to an external environment. With SharePoint RBS, we have taken the next step to this and said, SQL Server team, storage providers, please work with us. And here's the standard interface, how we want to retrieve and store blobs from you, so the documents and all this other stuff. And now you actually have RBS providers from SQL Server. That's the standard default that we provide. But NetApps, EMC, the usual storage partners will provide RBS providers. The reason why we do this is part of the continuous upgrade cycle requires us to make sure that the downtime for the database upgrade is as small as possible. Since blobs are really static, relatively speaking, from a schema perspective, we outsource them and we take the SharePoint schema and be able to upgrade them because the content database all of a sudden are very small and not as large as they used to be. They used to be terabytes. And they're now relatively small. So operationally, this is a very important feature for us. The SharePoint team originally wanted to go to Windows Azure as the RBS store. That didn't quite work yet, but they're working with the Azure team for the online implementation so that we also get to a pay-as-you-go model, which you can't deploy on-premise yet, but it's clearly one of the things that they want to do. The other reason why RBS is actually interesting is because certainly I believe that while the SharePoint team is a great team, they're not storage experts. NetApps, EMC, the SQL guys are far more experienced doing raw storage, meaning putting bits on disk. And so I'm actually happy that we're outsourcing that, quote unquote, from the SharePoint environment to the specialists that drive this. Sorry. In the online world, there is not. I will show you why. But you're right. There is another architecture picture that I should have added in the picture. There is a remote blob storage environment. Yes, we will talk about that. Again, that's where a little bit discontinuity between the online and on-premise world still will be. Turn off Windows Update, answer files, automation. So if you have never thought about answer files and all these things, so if you know sysprep, if that's not a word you use before, get used to it because that's one of the ways you create a Windows image and prepare it for mass distribution. Yep. We will get there. We'll get there. We can talk about it now. Okay. How do you deal with security? First of all, you harden the servers. You don't deploy what you don't need. There's a certain set of things that SharePoint requires, but there's a certain set of things in Windows that SharePoint doesn't require. So that's the first thing. So you harden the damn thing, use the firewall, use whatever technique is documented in various best practices or proven practices for security. The second thing is you introduce a release cycle. Whatever the release cycle is, it's 4 weeks, 6 months, 3 months, depends on your needs, but we are introducing a release cycle that every 2 weeks we replace the images. The whole environment is stateless. So the state is stored in databases, and those databases are secured, striped, rated, mirrored, and so forth, so that they are always available and protected, but we replace the whole farms every 2-3 weeks. Yes. Of course, there's a software maintenance process on the side, offline, that maintains the software. And the good news there is, A, not all patches need to be applied anyway. Again, if you have a hardened system, don't just do this without hardened systems and a security strategy. But looking at an image and then deploying it consistently is what we are aiming for. So we are replacing the farms rather than patching. Yeah. Yep. So the general notion is that with a hardened system, you don't need to do that. Well, again, we can have a debate later about it. But that's the way the whole cloud environment works. They don't patch. They replace the systems. Absolutely. So again, emergency-wise, will you be able to put a new image on the disk fast enough? We believe we can, and we are showing it in Bing and all these environments already. And the other piece to always think about, you're engineering an image. You're not just installing Windows Server blindly. You engineer an image. You don't put stuff on there that you don't need. No. Standard Windows Server. But again, you engineer the image using security-proven practices. You don't just go blindly and say, set up, run install everything on Windows Server. Windows Server is already very good at not installing stuff you don't need. But do some more thinking, and again, this will be documented so that you can say, this is the stuff that's on the Windows servers that we run, and we don't believe we need to patch. Again, there's a security perimeter, there's firewalls, all sorts of things, so we make sure that the SharePoint environment can only be talked to from using SharePoint things rather than rogue things. So there's a whole bunch of literature available of how you harden Windows environments so that they behave without patching them continuously. Okay? So it can be done. Yeah. What I mean with that is you have a set of images that you store in an image store. Let's call it Virtual Machine Manager, System Center. You create a continuous update cycle for those images. You put them in the image store. Then you have an updated running system for SharePoint. You take a load balancer, take half of the servers out, since they're all virtual servers anyway. You take the VHD file, retire it. Then you put the new VHD file on your Hyper-V, boot it up, double check it, sysprep it, all the stuff. And then you bleed out the other half of the load balancer, close the load balancer for a second, put the new one in, then replace the other one, do the same thing for the half, two-thirds, whatever you want to do in terms of rolling upgrades. That's what I mean with replacing the image. So we don't go into the existing VHD and run setup or patch or whatever. We replace the image. That's the way MS Online works. You don't have to do this. Okay? If you feel more secure and more comfortable with doing it the quote-unquote old way, that's perfectly okay and perfectly supported. If that works with your cultural processes and so forth, might be much better. I'm giving you the way we're doing this, and we can have a healthy debate afterwards, but that's the way the cloud works. They don't run setup. Okay? What do we have here? We talked already about that. Then load balancer. We talked about that already. A lot of people, so one of the things we are doing with Windows Azure right now in our environment, we're investing a lot of time in the network. Because, again, the network is very complicated. And we have found in our own operations that 50% of the problems we have is with network malconfiguration. The router got misconfigured, stuff like that. And so we're investing a lot of time in automating the network in Windows Azure. And in this simple case, we are really focusing on the load balancer as a primary tool to help us with these kind of things. Use on SQL Server. We will talk about SQL in a sec. Yep, blah, blah, blah. So the original idea that our friends had, that they wanted to also virtualize SQL Server, they are going away from that for a little while until the Hyper-V environment offers larger virtual machine types. But we still will go with the VHD file. So you have heard about boot from VHD. So we're using that feature so that we still maintain the image-based deployment approach. But we're not using Hyper-V. That's why I said you can do it with physical resources because of the boot from VHD feature. And that's what we are going to go for with the first version of MS Online based on SQL 2010. And as you can see here, to answer your question, we are actually using direct attach system. So the MAC2 system is a direct attach storage system with 2 terabytes at this point. And we're using SQL database mirroring for local high availability and log shipping for geo high availability. So we don't use a SAN. Is that a sensible thing to do for you? Is a different discussion. So if you're doing in your enterprise and you have a SAN-based strategy, I would not go right away and throw it away. Yeah. But the cloud people are moving to direct attached storage primarily because of cost. But there's other reasons as well. Performance is another one. The direct attached systems are faster, not significantly so, but they are faster, at least at this point in time. If you look at the picture that emerges, I don't know if you can see that given it's relatively light up here. There is an automation environment, which today is a mixture of system center components and custom code. I don't know if I can close this thing. So it's system center and a couple of custom code pieces. We are working on providing guidance to provide a complete system center implementation using system center Opalis, Ops Manager, Config Manager, those common tools to do effectively or to implement the MS Online environment. They understand machines, tenants, tasks that are being automated. We're using Windows PowerShell, a auto-deploy mechanism. Again, custom code right now, but you can use System Center Virtual Machine Manager for this. Normal AD, AD technology. This is an image manager. Again, we will not ship the image manager for MS Online, but we will give you the techniques we use to create the image, automate the image, and so forth. Again, there's an offline process where you create the images on a continuous basis to answer your, we don't patch. Yes, we do patch, but you don't release the patch in production in terms of running setup. Okay, that's maybe a better way of putting it. Here is the RBS provider. That's part of the architecture, routing and protection system center. I didn't have access to this picture, so I had to keep Windows Live ID here, which is what MS Online uses. But of course, you can put Active Directory or any other federated claims-based authentication environment here. Scriptable load balancers, switches, physical machines and virtual machines, and then there's a bunch of farms that we have already talked about. That is the environment, the way or the components that we use to run MS Online and use the various techniques that I've talked through a number of times to effectively build this thing. And the automation environment, for example, will automatically control all SharePoint farms across the globe for MS Online. Again, not something you might want to do, but we will run as far as we can in an automated fashion. This is the farms and the roles that I've mentioned a couple of times. So SQL Server is clear. There's 2 roles, SQL Server, and there's the witness for log shipping, database mirroring. Since we're using transacted database mirroring, you need the witness. If that's a good architecture for you, you should really think about that. Lots of people use failover clustering as their SQL deployment mechanism. Healthy debate, I think, should be had there. And then there's the various roles. These are SharePoint roles in the content farm, which is the web front-end farm. And then there's the federated farm that has a number of roles here as well. Those things change occasionally. We learn when we deploy these things and scale them up that that idea wasn't quite as smart. And we will change the architecture. And part of the plan is that we create a community that actually will take this architecture as MS Online evolves and share it on a continuous basis. So that when we change our architecture approach, we will share it with you and tell you why. This is what happened. Here is where we are. And the goal is not that you blindly apply the architecture, because it might not suit you. But at least you have a hint in terms of where are we going, what are we doing as a MS Online evolves, so that there is sharing going on. Again, I've talked about this already, got lots of excitement that we don't patch these things. so there are two key things here. First of all, have a security approach. Don't just go blindly in there and say, yeah, we don't patch. That's not a good thing. The other piece is have a real release process. Patching is really an emergency mechanism to some extent because of the way we used to run software, because their software was sticky. The way I look at machines today, and Windows is clearly the guilty party, good news is the others are following in us right away, that effectively you create unique instances. Once you patch, you create a unique instance. Because the patch system is unfortunately way too smart for its own good. So it makes decisions based upon its desktop heritage and effectively looks at things. And although it is computer software, there is a probability, it's not high, but it's a probability that there is deviation, which means you create a single unique instance. And the cloud will tell you that's the worst thing you want to do. And the other piece is, despite very good improvements in MSI technology, it's amazing technology actually, there is still, if you patch 10,000 machines, there is a probability that hundreds of them will fail. Unfortunately, because of their smartness, they will fail in unpredictable ways. So you actually have unique failures that you have to analyze. Again, bad. So in general, Microsoft is moving to introduce technology. Again, Bob Maglia's keynote shows one of them to allow you to get into this offline software creation mode, image creation mode, and deploy them in an efficient fashion. Because the SharePoint team right now actually has to suffer the same fates as you do. They use shipping technology. So they create, as I said, a single VHD. They have four VHDs that they maintain. Again, we can share which ones they are and what's in them. And so they go through the same stuff as you do. They don't have any Azure magic that makes it easy or anything. And so one of the things we are investing in is server AppV. So we have heard about AppV, I assume, application virtualization, which is, yes, an isolation technology, but it's far more management technology because it allows us to create an image and copy a file. We know how to copy files really reliably. And it's a zero or one chance. It's either there or it isn't. So it's a very, very good failure model as well. Because we copied it, it made it, or it didn't. And we are introducing server AppV so that we can do the same thing. We copy the file, and it's there or it isn't. And the other piece that server AppV does, it allows us to separate the operating system image from the application image. So making the imaging smaller so that you have an OS image and an app image, and you maintain them separately. So if you need to patch the app, you don't have to redeploy the OS. If you need to deploy the OS, you don't need to redeploy the app. Again, that's where we're heading as a company. And again, Bob showed the 2011 version of Virtual Machine Manager, where Server AppV is a key technology that we're going to ship with that. Again, a lot of learning came from the cloud into this thinking so that we are allowing you to move forward. The other piece that I wanted to talk a little bit about, I only have 3 minutes left, so I will talk very fast. I apologize if then the American vernacular becomes tough for some people, but we can then take it slowly if it's non-understandable. So the DDC stands for Dynamic Data Center, effectively our custom version of infrastructure as a service. So when you want to look at Windows Server, Hyper-V and all this stuff, how do you deploy this as infrastructure as a service? Think about that as your picture. And you've seen infrastructure, platform, software, and so forth. The emphasis is on the one side, what's the infrastructure looking like? So when I said a grid of identical machines, okay, how do you wire this stuff? What's the network design look like? When I said we need to move workloads anywhere they want to be, you have a certain implications on your network namespace design. There's a certain set of implications on storage and other things. So when we look at these resources that we want to virtualize and make available as a pool, there's a certain set of configuration that is not necessarily everywhere yet. A lot of the network and hardware design I've seen is already there, but there's still a lot of consideration where you isolate things. Again, the network guys use VLANs to create the segmentation that you want on top of a very flat namespace. So if you haven't thought about any of these things, that becomes important as part of moving to the cloud. And the DDC team will provide a guidance in terms of architecture design of how you took a network, compute, and storage and make it into a resource pool that can be then deployed flexibly for things like SharePoint Online. This will be, of course, usable for other scenarios, but for SharePoint, we're going to link with that. They will also look at all these various management and operations features, because as I said before, service management is becoming really important. When you deploy things as a service, you need to manage it as a service. It's kind of obvious. This is a list from ITIL, so if you're ITIL people, that's already very good. But we will highlight the areas where the cloud or resource pooling will deviate from ITIL, because ITIL is based upon a certain view of the world, which has changed a little bit. Not terribly much, but it changed a little bit. And the reference architecture will actually look at highlighting those changes so that you can look at your processes and say, what are we doing with these things? If you don't have any of these processes, there are products available from Microsoft and partners to help you start implementing those processes. I'm getting the I need to run faster thing. There is a certain set of patterns, so automation continuum, perception of continuous availability, blah, blah, blah. The decay and replace, I talked about decaying this morning. The resource pooling and the scale unit architecture that we are going to document for you so that you can look at, is that for me or not? Again, whatever I told you is still optional. There is no need to change everything, but we are sharing with you what we have learned so that you can make a decision. Do I want this? Can I use it or not? Reception of continuous availability. I don't have the time to talk through all this. Service management partitions. Oof. This thing is really talking to me. Scale units go not only in terms of software, but also hardware. So we will talk in this DDC guidance. What is the scale unit design for a resource pool? What are the calculations for capacity planning you need to have, saying if you have a certain set of decay, percentage of decay in the system, when do you change things, and so forth. Another concept is called fault domains. If you have not heard about that, another piece from the cloud, where if you deploy a scaled-out environment and rely on load balancing and so forth for reliability, how do you make sure that they are not in the same rack? Especially when you automatically deploy. Because if it were a simple deployment mechanism, they would put all these things in one rack, and if the rack fails, poof, your load balancing stuff is gone. So the cloud guys have introduced what's called fault domains. And a fault domain depends on what you look like. The original fault domain at Microsoft was the mini switch on top of a rack. So they had a whole rack, they had a mini switch, and since we don't put reliability in the mini switch, that is the unit of failure. And so the fault domain was a rack. And now we know that if you want to deploy, let's say, four copies of the same, we make sure that you say at least two fault domains or three or four, and the system knows how to place them. That's effectively how you use the fault domains to make sure that your automated deployment doesn't go and fail. Again, these techniques have not only been used at Microsoft, Amazon does something similar, and so forth. There is a bunch of patterns we will document, service delivery and guidance for operations. And we also talk about guidance for management, fault domains, resource pools, all that stuff as part of this guidance. Again, I'm way over. I see people already getting nervous. I want to get in here and so forth. So we don't have time for Q&A, and I apologize for the rush through the last stuff. But infrastructure as a service is a key enabler for a lot of these things, and your investments should be really starting looking at service management, because that is going to change a lot when you introduce these things. Some of these management practices like patching, upgrading, investments in that area is something to really think about. I'm not saying go and change your whole operations, but think about them, saying, how can I introduce it? What are the risks? What are the benefits? And if somebody tells you SharePoint doesn't effectively run on virtualization, you now can tell him to go and take a hike, because he doesn't know or she doesn't know what he's talking about. So again, lots of content. As I said before, I'm here to discuss pretty much anything that you might want to talk about. The presentation is going to be available so that you can look at it, and we are going to as Microsoft Consulting Services, publish a whole bunch of depth guidance on this. I just don't know how to make it available outside of the consulting channel. Doesn't mean that you have to buy us just to get this content. Let's have a discussion about it. Okay? Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the day, and I hope this was halfway useful. Thank you. Because, of course, this was a premiere, right? Because I've never presented this before, so this was the first time that we exposed this stuff to anybody outside of Microsoft. So here you go. Thank you.